The Black Mirror by Steve Doyle. The task has fallen to me to relate the particulars of my late employer's recent departure from this world. Thankfully, I am above suspicion in the matter, having been cleared by the police. Often a butler, such as myself, makes for a natural prime suspect, as indeed I was. However, I was able to prove beyond a doubt my whereabouts on the night in question. Unfortunately, or fortunately, there are no witnesses who can attest to the circumstances surrounding Lord Mulready's disappearance. But I know where he is, and I know what happened to him. I have been able to piece the story together, thanks in large part to the existence of his lordship's journal. He kept meticulous records of his experiments. Fascinated with the occult, he recorded spells, recipes, phases of the moon, and all manner of things of that nature. He amassed a great collection of such things as well. His library actually contains a 15th century Latin edition of the notorious Necronomicon, the ancient book of the dead. He was in the process of translating it so he could unlock its secrets. In fact, a passage in that dangerous book started the whole business of the Black Mirror. For years he had lusted over the thought of acquiring the authentic Black Mirror of Dame Alice Keiteller of Kilkenny. It seems Dame Alice was an Irish sorceress who poisoned her first three husbands and drove the fourth mad by casting spells upon him. Apparently this last man, Sir John Latour, regained enough of his senses to expose Dame Alice as a witch. This occurred around the time Pope John XXII, whose papal bull Super Ilius Specula fired the imagination of Richard de la Drede, Bishop of Ossory, who confiscated Dame Alice's items of sorcery, powders, ointments, herbs, etc., and had them burned in 1324. Somehow her black mirror escaped this fate. According to her consort, Petronilla of Meath, who was herself burned at the stake in November of that year, Dame Alice fled to England, and a young apprentice of the coven, one M. Foster O'Neill, made off with the mirror. This is the same M. Foster O'Neill who became famous for apparently weaving spells into such poems as Ever Bright, Ever Burning, and Dream World, not to mention Black Mirror itself, a copy of which is written in Lord Mulready's journal. Black Mirror. A mirror, reflecting not what is, not what will be, not what has been, nor what could be, yet reflecting all the same, a deep hope in the shallow pools of a wandering mind, long lost to the truth and stark reality of life. Why do you look upon it? Why do you recoil at the sight you see only in your mind? Pronounce the differences of the lie you are living, all in a mirror that burns in the darkness, and the reflections stare back, haunting you for eternity. Ellen Wynne. It was apparently his intention to crack the code of this poem and discover the spell which should no doubt be used in conjunction with the Black Mirror. Dame Alice's mirror next resurfaced around 1583 among the possessions of the Earl of Desmond. Legend has it that the Earl's wife surprised him in his chamber while he was preparing to indulge himself in some sort of black art. She begged him to let her learn the secrets of the occult. He agreed, but cautioned her that she must remain silent, no matter what she may see. She witnessed in silence his transitions to a great vulture, an old hag, and then a terrible serpent. But when he changed back into a man and stretched across the floor from one wall to the other, she could control herself no longer. She let out a scream, and the castle sank to the bottom of the lake, the Lough Gurr. And the legend doesn't stop there. Every 7 years, the Earl makes an appearance, galloping upon a white horse with silver horseshoes. Supposedly, when the horse wears out the shoes, the spell will be broken, and the Earl will return to his former glory. A blacksmith named Teague O'Neill claims to have seen the Earl up close on one of these occasions. It may be this O'Neill who came into possession of the Black Mirror at that time. At any rate, it somehow came to be owned by another O'Neill, one Sir Henry, was killed at the Siege of Limerick in 1691. The mirror passed down through his family and eventually made its way to England, where my former employer finally acquired it. Or so he thought. It turned out that the mirror which Lorben already purchased was a fake. He discussed his new acquisition at a gathering where Sir Henry O'Neill de Haynes Seagrave happened to be present. Seagrave questioned the authenticity of the piece, citing as evidence the fact that he himself actually had it, as it had been passed down through the O'Neill family for over 2 centuries. It just so happened that Seagrave was in need of a great deal of money for the purpose of building a speedboat capable of winning the British International Trophy from the Americans. The two men struck a deal, and Seagrave brought the Black Mirror to Lord Mulready's manor. Unfortunately, Seagrave later died on Lake Windermere in his new boat, Miss England II, after breaking the world record for speed. Inspection of the two mirrors showed that Seagrave had told the truth. Upon removal from its silk bag, it was seen that Seagrave's frame was made of ebony. The frame of the other was made of oak. Another thing was the black coating. Seagrave's proved to be scratch-resistant. The fake was covered with black felt, under which they discovered black paint, but not the sort that would have been made from charcoal and plant oils. This seemed to be commercial paint, like that used in an automobile. Lord Mulready would have been furious if he had not been delighted instead to have the authentic black mirror of Dame Alice of Kilkenny in his possession at last. Carved into the ebony frame in small letters, one word satisfied Lord Mulready completely concerning the authenticity of this mirror: Elenwyn, the nom de plume of M. Forster O'Neill herself. He began preparations the very next day. According to his journal, the mirror had to be energized with fluid condenser, to which he added a few drops of his own blood, and cleaned with alcohol. Then it would be ready to use at the next full moon. Lord Mulready intended to conjure up the spirit of Robin, son of Art, who was supposedly the demon with which Dame Alice had dealt. Failing that, he wanted to contact Dame Alice herself. On the first available full moon, he prepared his chamber by creating a circle of protection, burning incense, and lighting 2 white votive candles whose light must not be reflected in the mirror. He then placed the mirror upright on the top of a white cloth and seated himself in front of it with Necronomicon and the complete works of Maester Forster O'Neill open to the black mirror. His journal ends thus: I shall now breathe deeply and rhythmically, relaxing myself and entering into a state of trance. The police came and inspected the scene, from which I had removed Lord Mulready's journal, but could ascertain nothing, for they know nothing about scrying. I don't know very much myself, but I had his lordship's journal and familiarity with his library. I created a circle of protection of my own and burned some incense. I lit 2 votive candles, the only light in the room, as I prepared to give my energy to the black mirror. I imagined myself filled with white light until I could feel its power. I channeled it into my hands, imagining that I held a bowl. I then directed the light into the black mirror, making it ready to accept my thoughts. I began to breathe in a rhythmical fashion and felt myself entering a trance. I focused on my circle of protection until I felt completely at ease. I opened my eyes and gazed at the mirror, which seemed to be covered with a dark, cloudy mist. As the mist dissipated, a face came slowly into view. The face of my former employer stared back at me from within the black mirror. It had worked. I had contacted Lord Mulready. The binding spell I put upon him should keep him just where he is. As for me, I shall greatly enjoy my newly found personal freedom, while the black mirror of Dame Alice Keiteller sits snugly in its silk sack, where it shall remain.